Would you introduce yourselves, please?
My name is Con.
I'm Glenn.
My name is Neil.
I'm Paul.
And I believe you're in a band called...
The Parlatones.
How did you come up with... Nope, just kidding. I don't like history of bands can be read. But tell me a couple of things that are kind of not in the bio.
I think maybe what a lot of people don't read in the bio, it's a bio sort of gives you a fast forward synopsis of a band. Right. It doesn't really account for the blood, sweat, and tears that it takes in order to get to a certain level. I mean, we've read lots of biographies where it's like, you know, sort of read these biographies about your favorite band, and it sounds like they played one gig. Right. And next minute, everyone sort of discounts that. They sort of, there's a famous quote by Michael Stipe where he's asked by an interviewer, you know, what do you credit your overnight success to? And he was like, about 10 years. So for us, I mean, it's been a lot of hard work, but it's been an exciting journey. What people don't realize with the South African music scene is that we don't really have an established circuit. So for many years, we traveled the country with a trailer, with our own PA in the back. We'd set it up ourselves, sound check it ourselves, break it down, and travel to the next venue. And they wouldn't even be a proper venue. Some of them would be restaurants. Some didn't have stages, so you played on the floor. It's the unglamorous side of actually making it. But I think it makes us appreciate the successes that do come a lot more.
I think sort of how we got together was also almost random in a way, because we weren't friends at school. We knew each other vaguely, but somehow we ended up in Neil's garage as a band. So I think there's often, all the way along our career, there's been these weird coincidences where things have just happened at exactly the right time. And I don't know if that's luck or what.
But it is kind of fascinating if you are a band coming up in a country, and it's not underdeveloped per se, but it is a country, like you said, that it's not like there are big giant Boston Garden or, you know, Mercury Lounge or, you know, pick any of these places. It's not like there's big promoters there. I mean, obviously now in Johannesburg, there's probably a lot more than there ever was.
Yes, it is a lot more difficult. I think if you're a big established band, yes, there certainly is an environment for you to play in. And, you know, there certainly are arena-type environments and theater-type environments that can cater for you and that you can sell tickets in. But right. But for the hundreds or even thousands of up-and-coming bands, musicians, artists, of which there are so many different genres and so many different languages, that it ultimately dissects the power we call music into such small little niche markets that there isn't actually a circuit for the beginners, for the middle guys.
The thing was, when we started touring per se back then, that was all we knew. Like, touring with a PA was all we knew. Like, there was no clubs that would have that ready for you, maybe one or two. So I mean, it wasn't like we felt like we've been cheated because there were all these clubs out there with PAs. It was just how it was done. It was a norm, so it was fun.
So at what point did you get to a point in South Africa? Because you've had hits there, right? You've gotten played on the radio. You're a big band in South Africa. Now, being a big band in the UK, actually, 300,000, you know, sold is a gold record. Which is, you know, here it's a million, you know, so there's different levels of reality. So at what point in South Africa did you turn and say, okay, we're really big here, we want to take this out of here?
The first rehearsal in the garage is I think every band on their first rehearsal or their first show, we've reached heights that no other band's really reached in South Africa. But we still don't think that the ceiling's been reached. For many years, there was no real appreciation of live music in South Africa, for South African music. It was sort of an inferiority complex that everything that came from abroad was better. And, you know, for years, obviously, bands have been touring and are slowly debunking that myth that we are as good as what the rest of the world has to offer. And I think in a lot of ways technology helped that. You know, obviously coming from a relatively a poorer nation, we couldn't afford to go into the traditional studio, these big tape environments, spend millions on recording, using these top producers. It just wasn't, you know, even remotely possible. Suddenly Pro Tools and Logic appeared on the market and the playing fields were leveled.
Things can sound good.
Exactly. So, you know, in a big way that enabled us to, because also there's, you know, we find a problem when we try and promote our music in, say, France. They have a quota system which favors French music. But ironically, our quota system does not favor the South African artists. It actually favors international artists. So there is a quota system, but very small. I think it's 20%. And some radio stations are even prepared to pay the fine rather than actually adhere to the quotas.
Our managers actually have been a driving force behind pushing us beyond where we're comfortable. Like we were opening for bands for a year or two, and our manager said, okay, it's time for you to play your own shows in these venues that you've been opening for. And we were like, no ways, we can't do it. We can't. So he's actually been instrumental, I think, in pushing us out of our comfort zones. But I think you're never at a point where you can say we are comfortable and the best thing ever yet.
But this is a band who has managed to survive through the money's not in selling records. We know that. There's a little bit of money in touring. There's money in merch. But your own computer, your own snack box. So when your manager comes to you and says, hey, guess what? I can get picture of the band on the front of this gigabyte computer, or I can get you your own snack box. Where's the balance in your minds between, wait a minute, we're a rock and roll band, and, oh, wait a minute, we're a rock and roll band and we do want to be big, and this is what it takes today?
I think initially there was definitely a conundrum in our minds, because you sort of, you read stories about your heroes turning down ad syncs and turning down any form of endorsement, because it wasn't done that way in the past. For us, we don't see it as selling out. We actually see it as investing in the band. It's sort of a fundraising. It is all about the music, and it is all about the longevity and a career in music. And if those things enable us to do it, awesome. They are very brief, short-term, six-month contracts. Right. Now, in the past, what bands used to sign their lives away to record labels, they were owned for, you know, seven albums. It's not the case with us. We have total control over our careers. It's a very indie ethos. We may not sound like a true indie band, but we certainly have an indie ethos, and you know, sort of cuddling up with the corporate for a short period of time enables us to ultimately follow our dreams. Without those little partnerships along the way, you know, it would have made it a lot more difficult.
But also, in 10 years from now, people are going to remember your songs and your music. They're not going to say, I remember 8 years ago they had that snack box or they had that phone. Yeah. But the music stays with you and the band as a thing. Yeah, that's what you've done.
And so what hit me about your music, that it wasn't even a question instantaneously, is that these are songs. They've got cool lyrics. They rhyme at the right places. But then the way a lot of your songs open, where they go, is pretty atypical. You know, we call this dancing, or as you say, dancing. You know, that is the way that you've put that together. You're messing with the middle eight. You're putting it in different places. You're doing different things. And yet, that makes it hard for particularly American alternative radio stations to know what to do with it, right?
Yeah, well, I suppose we have we haven't been that calculated or thought it through that well. I think it is largely, songwriting is largely an organic thing. You know, you don't sort of sit down and go, we definitely want to create it in this stance. I agree with you. Melodic rock and roll is where we would place ourselves, and we're not music snobs. We love all forms of rock and roll, from the heaviest type to the lightest Simon and Garfunkel type. And and we also love pop. So I think all of that is going to ultimately filter through in our music.
The thing about a record like this is that we call this Dancing Does One Thing and Brighter Side of Hell Does Another Thing. You know, but it all kind of adds up to what the band is. But when you're sequencing, when you're looking at a record like this, do you think, well, let's see, this audience is going to like we call it. You don't do that at all, right?
No, we don't do that at all. I think to sort of answer that question is I don't think one man is an island. I think we're a collective. We have a collection of experiences, a collection of moods. And I think ultimately, I think our album may follow a similar pattern. You know, sometimes it's going to be up there, sometimes it's going to be down there. Sometimes it's chilled, sometimes it's more aggressive. But that's who we are as humans. The irony is Stardust Galaxies was just a song. And we had hundreds of names that we had sort of written down. On a sort of a whiteboard marker, and you know, what about this name? What about that name? How's this name going to work? What about this? And really, it was just a name. But I think, if anything, you know, what we do try and do with the songs is to take you through a journey of a life experience. It's really a snapshot of the experiences that we are going through at this particular stage in our lives, and hopefully that has a universal appeal, and the people listening can go, well, that's exactly how I feel at certain moments in my life. Because for me, my favorite songs are songs that spoke to me about my life.
So I'm really interested. Not only are you making wine, but you're making wine called Giant Mistake. You're making wine called, you know, Push Me to the Floor. This is pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, we all love wine. We all spent a lot of time in Cape Town, which is a beautiful region in South Africa where, you know, most of the wine comes from. And our last two albums were recorded in Cape Town, and as a result, we fell more in love with the area and the wine. And we did an interview with the property magazine, and they asked what your dream property would be. And I said it would be awesome to own a small wine vineyard and release a boutique wine. Fan of the band, read this and asked us if we would like to create our own. And sure. Sounds like murder out there. And so we actually flew down to Cape Town, sat down with experts and blended the wines. So what you actually taste in the bottle is something we created. And it was a great learning experience. It was a great party, as it will be at the end of a wine session. And a lot, yeah, we've got three wines out now, and we're working on a fourth.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich. And what that is two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to play in between.